I wanted to say a little bit about compassion in the middle way. We've been talking this year on the general topic of the middle way and compassion in our practice is not unusual to experience. Nor is it unusual to examine together like this. Especially these last few weeks in our Diamond Sutra class that we have on Tuesday mornings, Kokyo talked last week about practicing with awareness. I heard through the grapevine that that's also been a topic in the warming the hearth program here. So it's what a few of us have been thinking about: practice, compassion, the experiencing the reality of our lives. Maybe that's what religious practice is. Maybe we're drawn to that question that can be asked in many different ways. What is this life? What is this experience that we're having? And as I've said, it can be asked and answered in many, many different ways. Just on this street, we've got our version of that question, and we've got Holy Cross's version of that question, but I bet they're pretty similar. What is this experience that we have here? How can I realize the nature of the universe? Buddha sat down, Shakyamuni Buddha sat down 2,500 years ago for that 6 days or 6 weeks or 6 months to really try to understand that question. One version of the story says that his realization was the nature of suffering, that we all suffer because of grasping and desire, and the Buddha experienced liberation from this suffering when he let go of desire, and he wanted for the rest of his life just to help people be liberated from suffering. So in that version of the story, compassion, the wish to relieve others from suffering, comes up right from the beginning of this search for what's going on here, what's our experience here. In a little different version, or a little different look at that same experience, might be that that what he realized was the awesome harmony and unity of the universe. You know, the awakening happened at the rising of the morning star. You know, in the morning, time to wake up. There was the star, and here was the ground that he was sitting on, and he felt that awesome harmony. harmony and unity between perhaps that distant star, his life, and the very ground that he sat on. And he realized that people don't get that experience, that other people don't get that experience because of their suffering, because they feel separate from each other and from that distant star, and maybe even then, you know, from what goes on this very planet. And his goal then became to liberate people from suffering so that they too can realize the truth of the universe, this awesome harmony and unity. So it's, they're pretty much the same. And what I want to point out is that, you know, there's this relationship, this intimate relationship between the question of the reality of the universe that we might all be searching, we might all be asking by coming here to the Zen Center or attending Mass at Holy Cross. There's that connection between that search and the arising of compassion. I think that's what I liked about our class on Sunday that we started out with, that look at that connection between the wisdom tradition, our search for understanding the truth of the universe, and the arising of compassion. And I had the idea that that this connection not only was a pretty logical one that we could think our way through, and we were certainly doing a lot of talking on Sunday night, but the only reason that we were even having that discussion is that it's really experienced, that you really can't experience, you know, one without the other, that search for the truth of reality and the arising of compassion. It's something that's experienced and makes sense on that more visceral level. It's not just an academic pursuit to look for that connection. And of course, we've talked about this and we've experienced this many times. You know, we come to, for instance, Sesshin to maybe really get into a wisdom practice, really trying to look for the truth of our lives, for the truth of the universe in our sesshins. And despite, you know, occasional discomfort or the long hours or the sleepiness, we kind of, everyone leaves here with a smile on their face and a real connection with each other that's been in the sesshin. You know, sometimes in the middle of sesshin, we're all sitting around doing the meal practice, which is pretty formal. And the chants we do in the meal practice is about remembering the emptiness, the truth of the universe. And to reduce our grasping nature, we call food as medicine, you know, in these meals. This food is our medicine. But so we're sitting there pretty formal, and I just am moved by everybody's sincere practice to support each other, each other's deepest question. You know, that we're sitting here so straight and trying to do it just right, supporting each other minute after minute, chant after chant. So in the midst of this very formal wisdom practice, even our meals in sesshin are a wisdom practice. What I feel is this incredible support for each other. I've only done 1 3-month practice period at Tassajara back in the winter of 99, and Tassajara is wonderful, even at 25 degrees Fahrenheit, wonder as it is at 95 degrees Fahrenheit. So there's certain wonderful things even in a long winter practice period. But it's lots of sitting. It's certainly getting up early and staying up late each day. And at the very end of the practice period, Reb Anderson was the preceptor. He gave everyone a chance to say something about their experience. And one of the monks said, "I just love everybody here." And it was his truth. I think it was the truth for a lot of us, that with that long, extensive, chilly wisdom practice, that his overall experience was, "I just love everybody here." So not only are wisdom and compassion connected because it's a great idea, but it's something that's experienced again and again in our own practice right here today. The Buddha was moved by this awesome harmony and unity of the universe, that his moment there and every moment is the perfect expression of the harmony and unity of the universe. And that's what he asks us to remember every moment. And that one's easy to forget. There's lots of things that go on in our lives every day that don't seem like an awesome expression of harmony and unity. But the Buddha says over and over, just remember that. Remember that this is the perfect expression of the truth of the universe. I was battered up quite a bit a few months ago, and that's kind of been my practice, to sort of think, was that experience the awesome, perfected harmony of the universe? And I practice with that over and over again these last few months. I don't think I can sit solidly here and say that that's the experience I have all the time. At this point, I feel like I'm going around the back door a little bit, and I can say, well, I certainly am not going to going to let that experience separate me from the experience of the awesome perfection of each moment, and may I experience each moment as that perfection. So I can keep working with this by that kind of backdoor maneuver, that maybe not that, but I'm not going to let it prevent this moment from being experienced in its perfection, and it keeps my heart open. It says I'm not gonna stop with this trying to realize the perfection of each moment and having an understanding of that experience in particular. So and my experience is that question or that intention to experience each moment as the perfect expression of harmony really touches the heart each time, and if that's the universal question or a version of the universal question, it certainly is my experience that it has everything to do with the heart and the body and experience, that it's not an intellectual pursuit. I'm not looking to be able to tell somebody my understanding someday. It's something that I can experience moment after moment. So in Buddha's intention to liberate others, he says, you know, I had it pretty good as a prince. I was in, all of my desires were indulged. And I didn't have the understanding that I have now about the wisdom of the universe and suffering. I became a mendicant monk for 6 years, and I didn't have that understanding of the nature of the universe and suffering. So those are the two ends, those are the two extremes, indulging in desire and 6 years of austerities. That didn't work. And just sitting down, looking deeply, is the practice that worked. And that must be somewhere in the middle. That must be. And so he called his understanding for saving all beings the middle way. And he outlined a teaching for staying in the middle way, which were the eightfold path, eight practices that can be done one at a time or all together. In the reading we did by Bhikkhu Bodhi, the image he used was that all of these eight practices can be like the strands of a rope that are all together, And so they can be used all at once. They can be used a few at a time. They can be used as they come up, you know, right view of the world is one. Right thought, thinking correctly and having the right intention about our actions is another. Speech, looking at our speech, looking at our actions can help with this perfect harmony of the universe, watching our actions and our speech, looking at what our job is, and our mindfulness and meditation are also help us liberate ourselves and others from suffering and promote the harmony and unity, which is the truth of the universe. So that was Buddha's middle way. The practice of the middle way was the expression of harmony and unity in the universe. And I want to look at a little bit of the first two. Really are ones that we keep in our back pocket to keep us focused on the truth of the universe and manifesting harmony and unity in our lives. That right view. The Buddha said, just keep remembering that we're here to relieve suffering, and that desire and our actions cause suffering. Just keep that in mind. It helps our own practice, and it's a good model for others. And I think it makes pretty good sense. I think just telling people that they'll understand why our actions and desires are so key to our suffering, and let's keep taking a look at that. So keeping that right view, that correct view, the summit of all views is just keep remembering. The second one is thought, correct thought, wholehearted thought, the summit of all thoughts. Or also intention, it's sometimes called, is that link between keeping that in mind, keeping suffering and the liberation from suffering and the harmony and unity of the universe, keeping it in mind, and then the other practices of, you know, right speech, right action, right livelihood, meditation, and effort. Kind of our bodily actions. So this intention, keep that intention in mind. It's a good bridge between just thinking about it and the actual practices that we do and the actual help that we lend others to liberate suffering. And the Buddha said, this thought and intention is born out in three ways. One of them is to really, you know, keep looking at our desires, what we want, what we crave, and maybe since we know that there's a real link between that craving and desire and suffering, really try to keep it simple. You know, really try to keep the desire realm in check. Really keep things simple. Keep your life simple. When desire comes up, really take a look at that and say, is this going to take me right there to more suffering? Can I do something right now to minimize the suffering that I might experience with the arising of this desire? So that's one way of practicing this second of step on the path of right intention, right thought. I intend to really take a look at desire in my life and try to keep my life simple. Another way to keep that second step on the front burner is to really wish happiness for everyone. Really try to accept everyone and help them in their happiness. That it's something that all people want, is just to be happy. And can we wish that for everybody? And of course, that happiness is the metta, the loving kindness that we that the Buddha taught, which is really the bestowing a wish on everyone that they be happy, may they have a peaceful life, at ease. And how can we, you know, look at everyone that comes up to us on the street and say, I just want to be happy. I've talked about the Shuso from Green Gulch that Catherine invited here to speak many years ago, and he had a 5-year-old or a 7-year-old daughter, a young daughter, and he realized, you know, the great happiness that he wished on her every time she came into his view, and that he just looked at her and just wished great happiness for her, and it made him joyous to think about it, and he took it on a practice. He says, you know, why can't I look at everybody with that same kind of wish that I have for my daughter? He took that on, and you know, he said it's good to take on, because it really opened his eyes about how many good wishes he could give out over and over again, and kind of reduced the separation between him and other people when he would at least try to wish everyone he saw happiness. And of course, that was Buddha's experience of the universe, is that it is harmonious and unified, that there isn't a separation between any of us or anything, that it is a happy, harmonious, unified energy field. And this monk was up here telling us all, just like this, that he felt that if there was any gaps, it was a little less. If he could just say, I wish you nothing but loving kindness. I wish you happiness. And so he felt step number two, more harmony, more unity, less of a gap, just being able to say, I wish you happiness, I wish you loving kindness. And the third practice for this second step on the path is brings that gap even closer, that that vow to be harmless in the world, which is another way of describing compassion. And that's the experience that we all want to be liberated from suffering. That it's not just, and there's no just about saying I wish you happiness, but this third piece, this harmlessness, is really trying to be even closer with, I know we all suffer. I'm suffering here with you, and I want us to work on relieving our suffering, maybe just a little bit, maybe forever, but I know exactly what you're feeling, because as Buddha says, the suffering is our human condition, or we fall into suffering so easily, and the Buddha knew the cause of it, and he knew that there was liberation from it. So just that unity with others in our suffering brings us even closer, brings us even more unified, brings us more intimacy. And that whole image is close to the heart, is done with heart. That whole practice is done with the heart. That intention is done with a full, wide open heart. That not only am I going to be wishing happiness, but I really want to understand suffering, my suffering, and the suffering of others, and be liberated from that, and help others be liberated from that. So right here in step number two, once again, we can work with a compassionate heart, wishing happiness on everyone who comes in our direction, and merging, becoming intimate with our suffering and the suffering of others, and trying again and again to be liberated from that suffering. The monks sat with Buddha and his teachings for 45 years, and for the next few hundred years the monks sat with their own search for understanding of the universe and their experience, their lives, their heart, and reviewed and listened to Buddha's words over and over again. And the monks in later generations felt that the core of their suffering and the suffering with others is very subtle. It certainly is also about flash floods and bus crashes and sickness, old age, and death. But this separation that we feel from others starts with just, you know, identifying self and others as two different people. And also even as subtle as, you know, what we've been talking about these last few weeks, you know, that separation between the subject and object. I'm having a thought. I'm seeing the table. I'm reading the book. Just that, that pretty innocuous separation between the subject and object are the very roots of all the separation, that we feel in the universe, all the loss that we feel in the universe, that is our suffering. And that the liberation from the suffering is, really letting go, of our ideas about the other things, the other people, all the relationships, that we have about the universe, just, you know, getting closer and closer to our experience before the self arises and we remember, ideas about being separate from others, our likes and dislikes, our opinions about this or that. But can we just get closer and closer with just our raw experience of the universe, our truth, the experience of the truth? Can we get closer and closer without those thoughts and opinions? What did we just chant this morning? Our likes and dislikes are the disease of the mind. Our opinions about just this, about the color of this book, about you know, the temperature of the room. That's the disease of the mind. That's our suffering. Can we just get closer and closer without injecting the self or ideas? It's going to change all of our. It's going to, I mean, change our thinking radically. I mean, can we even call things a watch or a table or a book? Doesn't that subtly separate us? And isn't that just a kind of convention, a habit that we've used that's also part of the disease of the mind? So it's this willingness to fearlessly, you know, I want to experience the universe differently. I want to experience it as an expression of the harmony and unity that I know it is. And even these innocuous thoughts that I might have about colors or temperature gets in my way. And this is kind of our Mahayana influence. This is how our Mahayana early teachers talk to us about suffering and our relationship in the world. The Buddha really wanted to point out our interpersonal relationships and point out our suffering there. He certainly, you know, also talked about, you know, that unity and indivisibility of the universe. But his lessons were about the suffering from our interpersonal relationships and unwholesome thoughts, And our Mahayana teachers really wanted to look at these subtle roots that cause suffering and keep us from experiencing the truth of the universe. And in our look at the Diamond Sutra on Tuesday mornings, the Buddha brings up our bodhisattva practice, which, the bodhisattva is our archetype of compassion, is our archetype of heart wide open, who's taken a vow to save all beings from suffering, save everybody else's suffering, and help them cross that shore into nirvana. The bodhisattva goes there with his last relinquishment of suffering. He and she wants everyone to be liberated first and cross that shore. So this is the most open-hearted, compassionate being. And we take vows, become that being. We'll chant those tonight before we leave. Beings are numberless. I want to save them. So the Buddha describes how this great compassionate being saves others. And the Buddha says, before anybody is saved, before any of these other beings are saved, the bodhisattva has to recognize that there isn't this other self, that there isn't this other person to save, that there isn't this lifespan of coming and going and, let's come around again in the next lifespan and keep saving all beings. That there's just none of that. There's just this unity. There's just this non-separation. And all at once, in the Diamond Sutra, the wisdom of the reality of the universe, this unified, non-separated harmony of the universe, is united with the big heart of compassion. That it's not even like the bodhisattva with this great vow first has to have a great understanding. It's when that understanding happens, the heart is open and all beings are saved. It really is the example of wisdom and compassion being one thing, being that two side, being the heads and tails of the same coin, but a coin that's so skinny you put it sideways and you can't even see it. You can't even see that there's two sides. It's wisdom and compassion are just that one thing. It's the feeling of sitting at Tassajara for 100 days and just feeling love for everybody. It's the feeling of being at the Sesshin all day long, chanting and bowing and sitting, and feeling supported by everybody in the room. Our wisdom is nothing other than our open heart and connectedness and compassion. And it's what we experience in our practice, and in our search for that understanding of the universe. Let's end the talk here, and we have time for just a couple of questions, and plenty of time to maybe our hearts open along with the cookies and tea as well. So there's other times to chat. Thank you. Charlie.
So getting back to right view, and I think you described it as being a realizing and being aware that our desires cause suffering. I remember in Deepu Bodhi's writings that he also made a big deal that our ignorance is what causes suffering. So would that be an example of the ignorance he's talking about?
Yeah, and you know, I look at that ignorance as just our forgetting, and that, you know, moment after moment we can go, oh, now I remember. You know, maybe I'm ignorant 23 hours of each day, and when I remember, it feels so good, like, oh. I can feel my shoulders relax.
Well, I talked a lot to you about trying to get my head around ignorance, and I like the connection with forgetting. I haven't really thought of that one before.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
And how, you know, the Buddha originally asked us to practice right view, this kind of remembering suffering and the causes of suffering. What do you think our early Mahayana teachers would ask us to remember?
Well, another one that you didn't mention when you were talking about right view is subject and object and separation. Remember that we're not separate.
Yeah. Really look at its separation in its subtlest form. Kokyo directed me to actually one of Buddha's early sutras that ends with a poem about and it sounds a lot like our Zen practice, but it came from the Buddha's words, of a poem about, you know, no earth, wind, fire, or water, no sun, moon, or stars, and yet there's no darkness. And to dwell in that is to be freed from our suffering. And maybe that no darkness is that big bright mirror that Kokyo talks a lot about. Is that enlightenment that even all of these things that if we just stop separating the moon from the stars and the wind from the rain, can we just experience that great light that Dogen has a piece called Zenki, dynamic function of the universe. Can we just experience that? And maybe it's a type of light that we just don't know, with all of our opinions and thoughts that occupy us or maybe cloud us. Can we let go of the sun, moon, and stars and just experience that total dynamic functioning? Thank you. Adrian?
Yeah.
Did you have a question?
No, I
saw you glowing over there with your...
With all these ideas. That's such a long talk.
Yes, I'm thirsty for tea myself. Thank you. I've got some tea. Thank you very much. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's ways unsurpassable. I vow to become it.